Sheldon, we saw Austin out early and then leave. I'm wondering if you have an update and if you were concerned about his availability for tomorrow.
He just wasn't feeling great today, coming off the game yesterday. So just going to take the rest of the day here today and see how he is for tomorrow. We'll have an update in the morning, I suppose.
Can you update us on Joe Thornton's condition?
No update here today other than he's not going to be available tomorrow. He's, as I said last time, he's definitely going to miss some time. It's not a day-to-day thing at this point, but we don't have a final update or diagnosis, I guess, at this stage.
I've coached Luke like this for a couple of years as far as trying to get him to get some growth in his game. So nothing changes here. There's more spotlight on it. I get that. And I get you guys have to ask me the questions, but I think you're asking the wrong guy.
I think you're asking the wrong guy.
He's so entertaining. I know he comes off as a jerk sometimes, but I love listening to his sound bites. I really do.
Is he daring? John, that's John Tortorella, by the way, talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois and the latest benching of Pierre-Luc Dubois in a Columbus Blue Jackets game, which happened last night in a loss against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Dubois played 3 minutes and 55 seconds of the first period. I think his last shift concluded with like 4.5 minutes left in the first period, and then he was stapled to the bench the rest of the game. Is John Tortorella trying to get himself fired?
That would surprise me.
No, and I don't mean to, let me rephrase that. Not trying to get himself fired, daring Jarmo Kekäläinen, the Blue Jackets general manager, daring the Blue Jackets front office to blow him out. You want to pick sides? Fine. Because Pierre-Luc Dubois has been public about his desire to get out of Columbus. He wants to be traded.
And isn't he the guy, he was one of the players for the Blue Jackets in last year's playoff series? He had a good series against the Leafs. Am I thinking about the right guy?
Yeah. I mean, they got good goaltending for the most part in that series, save for the final couple minutes of game four when the Leafs came back from 3 goals down and tied it and got it to overtime. But yes, Seth Jones is their stud blue liner who they got 4 or 5 years ago in a trade with Nashville and a one-up for Ryan Johansson. That has worked out very well for the Jackets. And Pierre-Luc Dubois was a top three pick a few years ago who I think by a lot of measures has just come into his own. There was some discussion there as to whether he was the guy to take at that spot in the draft, third overall a few years ago. But he, I mean, he was on an upward trajectory, at least it seemed. And now it's all hit a wall here. And if you, not all of these things are the same, Hazel, but in the last couple of years, Sergei Bobrovsky hit unrestricted free agency and left. And he got $10 million a year from the Florida Panthers. Artemi Panarin, their best point producer, signs a free agent contract with the New York Rangers. He's been on Broadway for a year and will be for another 6. And there are guys who seem to constantly be looking to move on. Josh Anderson, who's now with the Montreal Canadiens, had an injury-plagued year last year, scored only 1 goal in the 27 games he did play, couldn't wait to get out of there, went to Montreal in a straight-up for Max Domi. And now Pierre-Luc Dubois is hanging around going, I don't want to be here. And the coach, and you know John Tortorella, the coach is just, he's got a, almost he's got a cattle prod and he's just poking the bear, poking the bear. But you don't need to ask me. You're asking the wrong guy. Go ask him. Pierre-Luc Dubois is requested for a Zoom conference after the game last night, declines. This thing is getting worse.
I like what Captain Nick Foligno said. He said, you know, this is the first time we've had to deal with one of our teammates looking to leave the organization. And, you know, in reading up on what happened, you were right. He was benched after that first period for what was described at the time as a lack daisical shift. And then Tortorella said after, look, it's not me assigning minutes, it's the player. Like, the player's got to show me that he deserves to be out there on the ice. I don't see a good ending to this story.
Pierre-Luc Dubois was benched for a lackadaisical shift.
Correct.
Could you imagine the furor in this city if every Maple Leafs player last year was benched because of a lackadaisical shift. Could you believe, I mean, I'm rubbing my hands together, and they're my nice blue latex gloves that I lose.
You look like you're ready to clean my toilet at home.
I'll tell you what, Hazel, if I keep going in the direction I'm going, I'm going to be happily taking minimum wage to come
Kevin,
over to the...
Scotty's here.
Clean the toilet! I can't do the Virginian accent. How would Barker tell me to clean the toilet?
Honey, Scotty Max here. He's here to go clean the toilet. Let him in.
Let him in. Hey, get what's that buzz number? I do look like I'm ready to...
You do.
I'm sorry, you've distracted me. Now, I had a very salient point, too. But could you imagine if you and I were waking up every morning, or Ziggy and I were waking up every morning, whoever was waking up every morning, talking about the latest benching for a lackluster shift. This tough love is fine, Hazel, but there is a point where players garner the leverage. When they start to get paid, you have to handle your star players differently. What did we know about the Toronto Maple Leafs with certainty once first Willie, then Austin, then Mitch Marner signed their contracts? That for as long a deal as he signed, Mike Babcock was not going to outlast any of them. That was just the truth of it. And you've got to be able to hold people accountable. But you know what? You know what you need from your players? And it's not what you need, it's what you earn from your players in order to be able to hold them accountable. You need to earn their respect.
Yeah.
You think Pierre-Luc Dubois gives a crap about anything John Tortorella says right now? In one ear, out the other.
Yeah, it's obvious he's lost the room.
It's just like this push-pull now.
Yeah, yeah, he's tuned out, essentially. He's tuned him out. And like you said, when the players make the big bucks, at the end of the day, I don't think it's the head coach that's sticking around. Unless the player asks for a trade. When you've got that kind of leverage, star power, I mean, it doesn't help that he's out there in the press with these slights and these sarcastic remarks about him. If you've got a problem with him, obviously speak to him, but I think doing it in front of the media, and John Tortorella has never been a warm and fuzzy, you know, and I love those things with Brooksy when he was with the Rangers back and forth. That's him.
That's 8 minutes on YouTube that you'll be glad you took.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to win this one at the end of the day. Either Dubois leaves or he may leave.
Right. Well, and so how does the dam break on this situation? Does Dubois end up getting his wish and get traded? Well, I mean, first of all, it's very early in the season. Second of all, we've got a very weird situation this year with the pandemic and affecting divisional alignment. I know that there are 24 teams right now south of the border, so we're not sitting here thinking, well, the trade to a Canadian team is complicated. There are plenty of other places that he could go. But a lot of things are complicated right now. The flat cap, et cetera, et cetera. And the Columbus Blue Jackets' desire to get fair value for one of its best players. Because, Hazel, we talk about this a lot when it comes to the Blue Jays. It was snuffed out earlier this week with the signing of George Springer. But I still think it's true for big-name pitchers coming to Toronto. It doesn't really happen via free agency. The Columbus Blue Jackets are the NHL version of that. Big name free agents aren't putting pen to paper with the Columbus Blue Jackets. You can't give an extra year of term and an extra $20 million. To lure a free agent to Columbus, Ohio, you max out at 7 years and you've got to do the overpay, right? I mean, if you are signing a free agent from another organization into your own, you can give no more than 7 years. And because you're in a hard cap system and probably operating off an internal budget as opposed to the $81.5 million salary cap, there's only so much you can allot to one guy. You're not luring free agents. Columbus is a great town. Columbus is a university town. Ohio State, obviously, but it ain't. It ain't Miami. It ain't Tampa.
Los Angeles.
It ain't Los Angeles. It ain't New York. It ain't Toronto. It ain't Vancouver. Like, it ain't some of the big destinations in the National Hockey League. And so I think screwing around with all of these players.
And then you develop.
What's the long-term game?
Right. You develop a relation, a reputation. Because then these guys that have left, you don't think they're telling their buddies, dude, Columbus, not a good scene. Tortorella, not a great guy, not a great head coach. There's that aspect to it. When you see, if you're a player and free agent and guys are basically paying millions of dollars, but they leave the organization, there's a problem there. And that's going to be your problem when it comes time to sign, you know, big name guys or, you know, sign or do trades with other teams. Obviously, they have to go to Columbus when you trade them. But at the end of the day, it also hurts your reputation when you've got these stars wanting and publicly wanting to leave. It's, you know, the PR guy must be pulling his hair out right now.
Yeah. And and if you're Jarmo Kekäläinen and you're saying, well, what are the, you got to live in the reality and not what the optics are. But sometimes perception is reality for a lot of people. If I fire John Tortorella now, we're a handful of games into a shortened season. That throws everything up in the air. It also looks like I may be capitulating to the player.
Capitulating?
Hey, you said genuflecting the other day. I'm allowed my word.
Okay.
Right? Because Bob Costas said esoteric, and you said genuflecting.
Yes, because I'm a good Catholic.
I got my capitulating in there. We're all... I told you it was coming before the end of the week. I was getting a word in.
Capitulating, my
Don't
God.
Ask me to, like, actually... Yeah.
It's 6:12. Do you have no humanity? Capitulating.
It's 3:12 in the morning Pacific time. People are just getting... Well, actually, no, people aren't just getting home. People are home.
I don't know what that word means.
Like giving in. If you're Jarmo Kekäläinen, you're giving in... you're trying to keep the peace among the players, so you're giving in and blowing the coach out. Well, that becomes a dangerous precedent to set because if they don't like the next guy,
so you're going down the same road.
Well, I mean, and then if you trade Pierre-Luc Dubois, it's very hard to get fair return this early in a season in a flat cap scenario. You're taking on somebody else's situation at similar money. Maybe a very good player, but another complicated situation from another town. Like, where's Pierre-Luc Dubois going to go? Where are you going to send him where you get ample return back? And since you can't lure guys to your city in free agency, you're just going to end up on this hamster wheel of, well, you know, we got to count on drafting, miss the playoffs and count on drafting high. And I mean, the Columbus Blue Jackets were so close. And I give them credit a couple years ago for staying with it. They were in a playoff position. They could have traded or sought out deals to send Sergei Bobrovsky, an impending UFA, out of town. They could have done the same thing with Artemi Panarin. They did neither because they recognized how important it was for them to make the playoffs, just given how so little that has happened in the franchise's first 20 or so years of existence, that they cashed their chips and then watched their two guys walk. Now you got somebody who's still controllable for a number of years because he's not anywhere close to unrestricted free agency saying, I've had enough of this. Meanwhile, you've traded Josh Anderson for Max Domi. Max is a good player, but Josh Anderson, who was hurt a lot last year, is a 30-goal guy when he's at his best, pops 2 for the Habs on opening night, doubling his goal total from last season. I mean, there's got to be a hockey fan or two who took notice of that in Columbus on opening night, right? So it's just, I don't know. They're a franchise that's there, but they're there. Every now and then, and when I say that now and then, Hazel, I mean now and then. I don't think about this a lot. And if I ever start to and admit it to you, come speak to me, sit me down and tell me it's time to, you know, change my career and start coming over to clean your toilet. But sometimes I realize... Holy crap, the Columbus Blue Jackets. There's an NHL team in Columbus. They're just there. They're just there, and they've got this loudmouth coach who won a Stanley Cup a decade and a half ago.
I felt that way with the Atlanta Thrashers. Like, they're just
there.
And
they weren't there for long,
no.
As it turned out. But they got a loudmouth coach who won a Stanley Cup more than a decade and a half ago, who's a YouTube sensation, because all you got to do is type in John Tortorella and you end up with epic clips of him. You talked about Brooksy, all of that, the showdowns that he's had with other reporters through the years. He's right up there with the Herm Edwards and the Jim Moras and the Mike Singletaries. I'm sure Dan Campbell, and we'll get to that next segment, the new head coach of the Detroit Lions, like with some epic rants. And that's what he's known for. How much playoff success has he truly had since he won the Stanley Cup 17 years ago with the Tampa Bay Lightning?
You think he enjoys the fact that he's looked at that way?
I don't think he cares.
Really?
I don't think he cares.
You don't think he enjoys it?
He could retire tomorrow and never have to work again, right? He could get blown out of Columbus, never get hired again. He wouldn't want for a dime. He's going to do things his way. You're going to conform or you're gone. The problem is that organization can't have too many of its guys being chronically unhappy.
And if you're an NHL organization looking to hire a head coach, you know by now what you're getting. Do you not? With John Tortorella, you know. It's not going to be a surprise. Dude, wow, he's a loudmouth.
Dude's like 60-some years old now,
and
or pushing 60.
Yeah.
Like, you're not changing the spots on that leopard.
Exactly.
You're not. And quite frankly, I mean, he's, what, Tampa Bay, New York Rangers, a quick cup of coffee in Vancouver, Columbus, yeah. Blue Jackets. He's on his fourth team. You know, his time is probably winding down. Maybe he's good for another job at some point if you're looking for somebody to go in and do a little shock culture treatment on a wayward organization. But I don't know. A strange situation in Columbus. He's clearly picking on the guy. And that doesn't work with younger people today. You got to explain the why as much as you demand the how and the what.
He said he's coached Luke for the last couple of years the exact same way. And as far as trying to get him to get some growth in his game and growth as a pro. So you're right. It's like this tough love that doesn't seem to be working with this particular. And he's 22. He's a young kid. And young people these days, I think they're looking for a better way to criticize.
Communication.
Correct.
Communication. And you can't really intimidate them, especially once they start walking into the money. Leafs and Oilers tonight. Game 2 of 2. Do we have Dave Tippett? We got Dave Tippett, the Oilers head coach. Hazel, he wants you to know. Maybe me too, but he wants you to know that it's your responsibility, not his. Your responsibility to find joy in what you watched on Wednesday night.
It's almost funny to me how everybody talked all summer about Toronto and Edmonton have to defend better, and then Toronto and Edmonton actually defend well, and now they think it's a bad hockey game. So that it just baffles me sometimes hearing what's going on.
We just said it was boring and uneventful.
Yeah, and it was.
And ugly.
But that is the way. Dave Tippett, like, nobody really talks about Dave Tippett because his success came in Dallas and he maximized Arizona in his years coaching there. Like, Dallas and Arizona aren't two organizations that we're paying a lot of attention to. Dallas a little different last summer when they made the Stanley Cup final, but ordinarily we're not. Dave Tippett is an excellent hockey coach, and they may have found their guy in Edmonton, who can get that Oilers team to play a better game. Edmonton is going to go through this season without arguably its best defenseman. Oscar Klefbom is hurt long-term. He knows he's got iffy goaltending. Mikko Koskinen can let him in at times and let stinky ones in at times. In fact, the Leafs' tying goal was a stinky one for the brief time it was tied on Wednesday night. The game that the Oil played on Wednesday is exactly what Dave Tippett wants to see night in and night out. But it is not what is going to keep eyeballs watching hockey games. And that's the difficult thing that this sport always faces. Coaches want it boring. Fans want high-octane offense, and they want the marquee. They want McDavid for the Oilers, Matthews for the Maple Leafs. And if we don't get a show, we're going to be disappointed about it. And we're going to bark about it. And Tippett says we should appreciate that type of hockey.
Yeah, he likes that, you know, those close, those tight games, those playoff style games. He said he'll take a 2-1 game all day as long as they win in the end. I'm not sure that, you know, you can get fans to buy into that style of game night in and night out. A little bit of offense always helps, but to have these 2-1, 1-0 games, I'm not sure. I think they're great every now and then, but it's nice to see some offense in hockey.
I do, like, as I think about it, it's Tippett knows he's got two potential game breakers on his roster. If you can keep things close, something special could happen with Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl on the ice at any time, especially late in a hockey game if you need a goal. And we discussed yesterday that we felt that the Leafs did a pretty good job of clamping down on those two. Now, Draisaitl did score a goal in the game, and Connor McDavid did drive wide once on Jake Muzzin, didn't go in. He did have another drive to the net in the second period, didn't result in a goal. You can only hope at best to contain Connor and limit his chances. But the Oilers have those game breakers. You're down a goal, you're tied. You can tie it or take the lead. You can grow a one goal lead just in a moment. I feel the Leafs are the same way. I don't want to be bored every night, but if you can contain high-grade chances against, if you can limit those over the course of a game and keep games close, you got Austin Matthews, who is capable of a special moment at any point in a hockey game. You got Mitch Marner. You've then got John Tavares and William Nylander on the second line. You've got potential game changers, game breakers. If you focus on the details for most of the game, you're going to capitalize on opponents' mistakes with some of your best guns. And that can be the difference in a one-goal hockey game. You know, not letting things get out of hand. And the way that these coaches get guys to buy in is to have them play the way the Oilers did on Wednesday night and those players see that that way is successful. I'm going the over tonight. I think we're going to have a completely different hockey game, Leafs and Oilers, than we had on Wednesday. But if Dave Tippett can hammer home over the broader course of this season that style of hockey, it ain't going to be exciting, but it could be successful for Edmonton, especially because of their game breakers.
You mentioned Austin Matthews. He actually left the ice early at practice yesterday.
Not feeling well.
Yeah, not feeling well, and they'll have an update on him in the morning. That is a little worrisome when you're already down at Joe Thornton, but who knows?
Well, and we live in a world, Hazel, where when somebody says they're not feeling well, everybody thinks, oh, that must be COVID. Like, I had a very slight scratch in my throat a couple of weekends ago. It was nothing. Like, I wasn't stuffed up. I wasn't sneezing. I wasn't doing any. I just had like a slight tickle in the back of my throat. And I thought,
you immediately,
holy crap. Yeah. Like, do I have COVID? And I get screened every now and then. And thankfully I don't, but the smallest little thing forces you to take those precautions. So hopefully he's all right and can go tonight.
There's a lot of symptoms with COVID. It's like, do you have a headache? Do you have a cough? Do you
smell?
There's like a lot. So any one of those symptoms, you automatically go there, unfortunately, because of the world we live in. But yeah, I'm hoping it's just, you know, tired coming off the flight, that kind of thing.
Hopefully we enjoy the hockey game tonight, unlike Wednesday. Hopefully we enjoy the result as much more than anything else as the Leafs and Oilers play tonight, a game you can listen to right here. I should say we have the game on Sunday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Leafs at Flames. Leafs, Oilers tonight, and then Toronto heads west for games against Calgary on Sunday and Tuesday. Dan Campbell is the brand new head coach of the Detroit Lions. We're going to play for you a portion of his introductory press conference yesterday, and then we're going to play for you a portion of Robert Saleh's introductory press conference as the new head coach of the New York Jets. One is inarguably more entertaining than the other, but the question is, out of those two gentlemen, who would you want to play for? Hugh will jump into the conversation. We'll play those clips and discuss next. Hazel May, Ziggy is back next Wednesday. Jeff Blair will be in your chair, Hazel, on Monday and Tuesday morning.
I will be tuning in.
No, you won't. You won't be awake.
Jeff, you may be right. I will wake up on Sunday. I know that for sure.
You will be, sorry, Hazel will be drowning in her sorrows.
Stop.
After our hometown Buffalo Bills take her Kansas City Chiefs out.
Fingers
on
crossed.
Sunday.
By the way, did you know that Jeff Blair is a big Formula One fan? I cannot wait to do about 30 to 45 minutes.
You're a liar. He's a soccer fan.
No,
I know that.
He likes
diehard
F1
soccer.
Too.
Does he?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Stay tuned, folks.
Here we go.
Half an hour to 45 minutes of Formula One talk Monday.
Okay.
Can't wait.
And as you like to remind me, Hugh, that is not the car league where they just drive left in circles.
No, they turn right every once in a while.
They turn right every... Yeah. That's not the car league that turns left all the time. I know my sprots.
Stop it.
What are you talking about? You can't get anything past me.
I am torn. Let's be honest. Growing up in Toronto, you have a soft spot for the Buffalo Bills. And now they're facing my team and the Chiefs. And, I mean, I don't know how to feel. Of course, Hugh, of course I want, you know, Patrick Mahomes back under center. Of course I want them to move on to the Super Bowl. But... gosh darn it, did it have to be against the Bills?
Yeah, I know. Huh? My thing is, you always stick with your team. You cheer for your team. That's the team you cheer for. Doesn't matter where you live, you cheer for your team.
Which leads me to my next question. I want to ask Scotty first, and then Hugh, I want you to chime in. If you're not rooting for your hometown team, obviously Toronto does not have an NFL franchise, so, you know, I understand why people are Bills fans.
Yet.
But why did you, Scotty, become a Niners fan?
Why did I become a Niners fan?
How did you become
January of 1989. I'm 9.5 years old. I was just getting into football, starting to watch it with dad in the basement. And they were in the playoffs at the time. And I want to say, and I'll obviously be corrected if I'm wrong, that they beat the Vikings and the Rams in whatever order. And they went to the Super Bowl. And they won that thrilling game late. Montana to Taylor over the Cincinnati Bengals. So I picked them. And the next year, they won the Super Bowl again, destroying Denver in that Super Bowl. So my first little bit as a fan, first year and a half, I saw two Super Bowl victories. And I always say, like, 9.5, 10 years old, that's where you really start to form your lifelong attachments to certain things. If you're a sports fan, it'll be sports teams. That's when it started for me, and I have stuck with them through the 2-14 seasons of Dennis Erickson and Chip Kelly, which came in 2004 and 2016. Like, I've been through all the bad too, so I've been a fan of them for 32 years now.
What about you, Hugh?
It was more situational than anything. I grew up in the Ottawa Valley, and for whatever reason...
G'day.
G'day. I'm from the Valley. Take the car, go to the bank. where we were, our cable system, we seemed to get a lot of Washington games.
Ah.
So I became a Washington fan. I love the Hogs, Joe Theismann, John Riggins. John Riggins especially is probably my favorite all-time football player because I played fullback in high school as well. And I kind of modeled my game after his, big, dumb, and slow. and it's just an affinity I've carried throughout. Stupid nickname. Glad they got rid of it. But, yeah, I'm a Washington fan.
And so people look at me and go, how did you ever become a Kansas Chiefs fan? Well, it's very tied into Scotty. Big Joe Montana fan gets traded in the early 90s to the Chiefs. And I just kind of stuck with them.
So you
stuck
followed
with them
there.
Yeah. You know, went through the Elvis Gerback, the Rich Gannon, the, you know, Matt Cassel, Damian Heward. Alex Smith was my favorite. Yeah. And and like the Niners, there were some lean years that I would not even utter Kansas City Chiefs in front of friends.
Did you guys not have Steve Bono as well?
We did.
Yeah.
Well, so, listen, like, we did. Yeah, yes,
no,
they
no,
did.
But think of the 49ers Chiefs ties to quarterback. You got Mon.
True.
I think Steve DeBerg.
Yep.
If Steve you go
DeBerg.
Back even
oh,
further.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. We had Green.
Why do I always start singing Lady in Red whenever I hear the name Steve DeBerg?
Because it's Chris DeBerg.
Chris DeBerg.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. You had Trent Green. That's right. I forgot.
That's
about
right.
That.
And little known fact, and maybe Buffalo Bills fans do know, but Marv Levy was once a head coach for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
And then Dick Vermeil, Gunther Cunningham, Herm Edwards, Todd Haley, Romeo Crennel. I can go on and on. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm always fascinated by people's fandom and why. And I'm sure I just took us way off the path of what we were supposed to talk about.
I think about Niners, Chiefs, DeBerg, Montana, Gerback, Bono, Alex Smith.
That's
like all
that
of
is,
it.
Yeah, right? That's like fascinating.
And not dissimilar uniforms. But yeah, we are digressing. So we'll get to the AFC and NFC championship previews with Charles Davis at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. We have a tribute to Tim and Sid that we will share at 7:45 off of their big news yesterday that legendary show in all of its incarnations is coming to an end in late February as Sid moves on to breakfast television. So we'll pay tribute at 7:45. But there have been two head coaching hires in the National Football League of late who have given their introductory press conferences to their new cities. One is Dan Campbell with the Detroit Lions. And for a brief bit of context, Campbell was a tight end on the Lions team in 2008 that went 0-16. So he played on the worst team in Detroit Lions history. And if you follow football, you know that the bar has been set incredibly, incredibly high on what would constitute the worst team in Detroit Lions history. Like, it feels like the Cleveland Browns are exercising demons. The Buffalo Bills, although the four Super Bowls in the early 90s make it a little bit different, they're exercising demons now. The Detroit Lions have many, many, many demons, and it seems like they're inviting all of the old Browns and Bills demons to join them. Detroit is just a cursed franchise. So Dan Campbell takes over as head coach. Robert Saleh, ex of the 49ers, as their defensive coordinator, takes over in New York with the Jets. Both spoke yesterday. We have two clips each of both men. We're going to go Campbell, Saleh, Campbell, Saleh. And I want to discuss who we would rather play for. Here's the first snippet of Dan Campbell.
So this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right, that's going to be the mentality.
Something about kneecaps. Dan Campbell in Detroit, Robert Saleh with the Nye Jets.
To our players, myself and the entire coaching staff are beyond excited to work with each and every single one of you. We're going to do this thing together. For our organization, get used to the mantra, all gas, no break. When we talk about all gas, no break, we're not talking about effort on the field. We're talking about the process at which we do things. We're talking about the way we prepare, the way we wake up every single morning, the way we rehab, the way we communicate, the way we speak to one another.
Back to Dan Campbell.
This place has been kicked. It's been battered. It's been bruised. And I can sit up here and give you coach speak all day long. I can give you, hey, we're going to win this many games. I can't. But none of that matters, and you guys don't want to hear it anyway. You've had enough of that shit. So excuse my language.
And back to Robert Saleh.
To our fans, we embrace your passion. We embrace your expectations. We cannot wait to go on this journey with you. Please understand, we understand that we have a lot of work to do, but make no mistake that our goal is to win championships.
And I'll add this via Pro Football Talk, NBC's NFL site, which they credit to the New York Post. Robert Saleh saying this: players want two things from a coach. First, they want you to know you care about their well-being. As a coach, you make a personal investment in people. And two, can you help them make plays on Sundays, make enough plays on Sundays for them to get paid as much as possible? We're laughing at Dan Campbell's, we're going to bite you in the kneecap when you knock us down, and then we're going to get back up and you're going to knock us down again. And then we're going to, as we're getting back up, we're going to bite your other kneecap, and then we're going to punch you in the face, and we're going to get punched. And it's just going to, it's going to be a big MMA fight.
So violent.
All the vernacular and all of the, it, and it's ha-ha funny. That's going to go down with Singletary. That's going to go down with Jim Mora. And the variations.
Playoffs?
Yeah, on the stuff that they did.
Dennis Green.
Dennis Green.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
Right. Right. My, and Mike Singletary's can't coach him. Yep. Can't do it. All that. That's
I gonna, want winners.
Yes.
Take that, Vernon Davis.
Robert Saleh is the guy who gets it. Players want two things. They don't want, well, they want three things. I'm going to say this. They don't want a coach who's going out there talking about biting kneecaps as if that's some kind of tone set. I got a sense of humor. I laughed at that. But let's be real here. You could not have hired a more Detroit Lion-esque. There's no quote that is more appropriate for the brand new head coach. I watched Jim Tomsula grunt his way through his introductory press conference with the 49ers in 2015. I said, this guy's got a year. And that's being gracious. And sure enough, he was gone. Dan Campbell, are you inspired by kneecap guy turning that franchise around? Robert Saleh with the New York Jets, that's a pathetic franchise. I'm telling you, he'll hire the right people. He'll bring the right people along to coach his team up. He's going to care about his players. 49ers players who played on his defense for 4 years testify to that. And number two, he also gets it. The whole point of pro sports, and specifically pro football, where there are no guaranteed contracts, is to get guys through their first 4 years in the league to a point where they can secure the bag. Get them paid. I'm going to coach you up. I'm going to put you in positions to succeed. I'm going to get you to a place where you have individual success and team success so that you can make money. Because all we know in a non-guaranteed universe is the second contract in the National Football League is what makes the difference. That's when guys make money that sets them and their families and future generations up for life.
Certainly two different introductory news conferences yesterday, and I hope that Campbell enjoys his 2.5 seasons as Detroit Lions head coach before they get rid of him. And when you're losing 37-3, I hope you can rely on biting the other team's kneecaps. That being said, that's nice and everything. These two guys, they're hyped to coach their new team. These are two awful, awful football teams. And with Saleh, I hope he's given the time to turn that franchise around. He works in New York, not a real patient market. I hope they give him the time. Not sure they will. 2-14 last year.
Who's they?
The media and the fans. And we cannot underestimate the impact of the New York media
right.
On coaching staffs.
Right, but Hugh, that is just dysfunction then. Unless Robert Saleh himself is dysfunctional, and he has given no indication that he is in his years as defensive coordinator with the 49ers.
No, he's really solid.
He's really good.
He was the perfect guy for the job. I just hope that they have enough patience and allow him to do his job turn that ship around.
They are ownership.
Yeah.
They are ownership. They are not the fans and media. We were lectured in this city for more than a decade that we would not put up with a Maple Leafs rebuild. That was always bullcrap. We knew the product sucked.
Yeah.
We knew it stunk. We knew it needed to be changed, and we knew it needed to be hollowed out in order to facilitate the change that, sure enough, we've now gotten because it got hollowed out. We went through that pain, but we were told for a decade we wouldn't put up with it. That's a lie. I think New York Jets fans, if they see and understand the plan, Hazel, will be fully on board.
I'm going to take the other side and think, okay, there's been a ton of coach speak in these introductory press conferences for the Detroit Lions over the past. Maybe they need Dan Campbell as the defibrillator and just try to bring that franchise to life. Because look, the Detroit Lions, God bless them, they're the poster child for like a losing franchise, for a franchise that's just sucked over decades. They haven't been in the playoffs in 3 decades. And maybe you need a Dan Campbell. Maybe he's not warm and fuzzy, and, you know, maybe he's not flowery and not going to have his players over for dinner, but it hasn't worked. Maybe you need this kind of head coach.
There might be, and you're right, there might be an initial bounce here. I think guys are going to get on board with the hype and everything, and I'm sure he's not going to be like that all the time. I think he kind of lost the handle a little bit yesterday. He kind of hit the rhubarb. We'll see. These teams are awful. Coaches aren't the ones making plays. The players still have to do that. And you can have all of the pep talks and all of the great coaching philosophy you want, but if a guy blows coverage and the top comes off the defense and it's an 85-yard touchdown pass, that's not on the coach.
A lot of coaches are lunatics, right? I mean, that's just...
yes. Isn't that a requirement?
Thanks for... to Dan Campbell for letting the cat right out of the bag.
We're going to bite a kneecap off.
Yeah.
All right.
Bring extra kneecaps when you play the Lions.
Like, I mean, what do you think? Aaron Rodgers is. I didn't scramble right all of a sudden against that Lions defense because I was worried about my kneecaps. Kneecaps. It's almost like it. I don't want to go too far down that road. It feels like it might be a fetish or something. Look at that kneecap.
Go on.
Go on.
I'll be interested to
see. Like what you did with that kneecap.
I'll be interested to see how players, you know, take to that style of coaching. You know, very rough around the edges. You know, you're not going to intimidate us.
I think it's going to hype some guys up for sure.
Yeah. But
the veterans who've been around a while, they're probably kind of rolling their eyes a little bit.
they're laughing.
They're going, huh? Like, they hated Matt Patricia.
Yes.
They hated Matt Patricia because he brought all of Bill Belichick's psychopathy and none of Bill Belichick's capability. Right? So it became a complete facade and a total failure. They tuned him out and he got pushed out the door because they wouldn't play for him.
Yeah.
And now you got a kneecap guy.
That's what we're calling him, kneecap guy.
Like
Coach Kneecap.
Like I don't know. Maybe Dan Campbell's going to be the head coach of the world champion, Super Bowl champion Detroit Lions someday. And I'll raise my hand and say I was wrong. But it just feels like a clown show. Like, who says what he said yesterday? I can't take that seriously. I can take a guy seriously, Robert Saleh, who indicates to me, I want you to do well. And I want to maximize your earning potential. Like, that's talking to me as a player, if I was a player. That's talking to me where it counts. Telling me that I'm going to get pushed down sometimes, but I'm going to nibble on somebody's kneecap on the way back up. What the hell does that even mean?
But that's Dan Campbell's message, too, but in a different way. He's telling his players, look, we're done being doormats. It's time to change, you know, the culture. Time to win. And maybe it's not flowery, but I believe it's the same message he's giving his players.
Bring back Wayne Fonts.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Last time the Lions hosted, I think a playoff game was Wayne Fonts. 1991 when they won the NFC Central, I think it was called at the time.
Wow.
I hope that's not one of the trivia questions in All or Nothing this morning. I might have given it away. Man, that would be a deep dive. But we are going to play All or Nothing on the other side. $100 in Untuckit gift cards up for grabs. Dial up to be the contestant. 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. All or Nothing. Then Charles Davis.
It's time to play All or Nothing with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We had a winner yesterday, so $100 in Untuckit gift cards up for grabs as we play All or Nothing. 3 true or false questions. You got to get them all right or all wrong to win. Our contestant on Friday morning is Mike in Toronto. Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning, and good luck to you. Hazel's got true or false question number 1.
Morning, Mike. The Bills won their last 4 straight AFC title games. Not even the Patriots or Steelers have accomplished that feat before. Mike, is that true or false?
True.
You got it. The Dolphins were the closest with three straight wins from 1971 to 73. I think Bob Greasy might have been the quarterback then.
Yeah, and no NFC team has won more than two championship games in a row. All right, Mike, you're in good shape here. Get the next two correct, and the gift cards are yours. Hugh.
Mike, happy Friday. Here we go. Over to the NFC title game, there is just one team in that conference that has never won an NFC championship. That team, of course, is the Arizona Cardinals. Is that true or is that false?
False.
Yeah. In fact, it was the aforementioned Detroit Lions who've never won because they suck.
Tell us how you feel.
I feel like we almost gave that away in the last segment, too, although it's obvious. All right, Mike, on the eve of the championship weekend in the NFL, we'll close out with another football question. If you get this right, you win. Of the four quarterbacks in action this weekend, and we are presuming based on this question that Patrick Mahomes absolutely 100% is going to play, of the four quarterbacks in action this weekend, Patrick Mahomes had the most passing yards this season. True or false?
Well, I don't think you guys would give me three trues in a row, so I'm going to go false.
Oh. Oh. Mike!
Oh,
he's
damn.
My guy.
Womp, womp.
4,740 passing yards for Mahomes. Brady, 4,633. Josh Allen, 4,544. And Aaron Rodgers, 4,299. Mahomes played in 15 games. All of the others appeared in all 16 games for their teams this year. That's a tough one, too, because Kansas City played a lot of close games. It didn't feel like they were that firepower team
in the second half
that they were last year, but Patrick Mahomes still garnered all of those yards. Elliot Friedman at the top of the 8 o'clock hour on the state of the Maple Leafs. What we can expect tonight, Leafs and Oilers, coming off of the snooze fest on Wednesday that Dave Tippett so enjoyed, on chips and pucks, on John Tortorella and the Columbus Blue Jackets, on the Washington Capitals COVID situation. That's an hour from now. We'll also give you a keyword in the 8 o'clock hour, the next keyword, in your effort to win a virtual meet and greet with Joe Thornton. Up next, Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS. Can Terrific Tom or Tom Terrific or Magic Blueberry Man go up to Green Bay? Hazel.
Coffee,
save
please.
Me.
Coffee.
Help. Defibrillator. Can Tom Terrific and the Magic Blueberries go up to Green Bay and beat the Packers? We'll ask next. And Oilers tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Raptors, who may be without Pascal Siakam, bit of a groin issue, host the Heat again in Tampa. We'll reset those conversations at 7:30 and talk about the possibility of Tokyo 2021 being a no-go. There are some reports coming out of Japan that the Japanese federal government has significant doubts about whether these games can go off. Just given the COVID-19 pandemic, all of that coming up at 7:30. At Ode to Tim and Sid at 7:45, and then Elliot Friedman an hour from now. Devon White, Blue Jays great, and a current Buffalo Bisons coach will be along in the 8 o'clock hour as well. But it is NFL Championship weekend. We've got the Battle of the Bays, the old NFC Central, although it's really Brady and Rodgers, the Battle of the 12s that we're talking about here. At Lambeau on Sunday, it's the Buccaneers and Packers. And at Arrowhead, it is the local-esque Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs and the right to appear in the Super Bowl. Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS is with Hazel May and me to preview these games and talk about some of the coaching hirings and all the other goings-on around the league. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning to both of you, and happy NFL Championship Sunday on Friday. so we're all excited about
well,
that.
Well, we're not going to lead with this, Charles, but, you know, if you need at any point a Dan Campbell-like speech to pump you up, you just let us know. You just let us know, and we'll give it to you, okay? You know? Yeah, if we got to bite some kneecaps around here to turn up the dial, we'll do it.
Yeah, okay.
I see. You're a former player, and I love that reaction. I love that reaction. And it just backs a few things up that I'm thinking.
All right. You got it, Coach.
Yeah, and we will get to that in a second. Let's start. I mean, look, Buffalo is the quasi-local team here in Toronto. About an hour and a half separates us, depending on the border weight. And this is a Bills team that has been building toward this moment for a couple of years now. Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott have something going. And in their 4 years with that organization, they have pieced together a really nice roster and watched their quarterback, Josh Allen, come into his own, especially after acquiring Stephon Diggs, being aggressive and going and getting an available and previously unhappy receiver and bringing him to a place that he likely would not have chosen of his own volition. He probably wouldn't have chosen Buffalo in a free agency scenario. It has worked out wonderfully. The Buffalo Bills on Sunday, can they go into Kansas City and do it?
They can. They absolutely can. Will they? Remains to be seen. But they can, because it's really hard for teams to carry the mantle of being the best in the league, to carry the mantle of repeating, to carry the mantle of winning with style, as Kansas City has done so well over the last 3-4 seasons, where we expect them to, you know, even if in our mind we know it's not the right number, but it feels like Kansas City can drop 40 on you at any given moment, any given second. And they can, but have they lately? You know, it's that sort of a deal. The way this game is going to be played, I think, will be very, very different than we saw in the regular season. And I give Kansas City a ton of credit in that game. You know, everyone's focused on Buffalo and the changes they need to make and what have you. People forget that what Buffalo threw at Kansas City was a game plan that was supposed to be the right game plan to confound Kansas City, confound Patrick Mahomes, keep them at bay. And that is, let them run the football until they exhaust themselves, but don't give up the big plays out wide. Well, Patrick Mahomes was extremely efficient. He only threw it 26 times, I think, in that game. But he threw it really well, threw a great proficiency. But the big thing was they stayed patient with the run game. I think they ran it 46 times for, you know, 250 yards or somewhere in that neighborhood. 246, I think it was. That wasn't supposed to be part of their MO, that they had the patience to do that. Give Andy Reid credit, because the book around the league was, you know, at some point Andy's going to throw it. He just can't keep running it no matter what you do. And they did. Now, it's different. There's no Clyde Edwards-Helaire, potentially, on Sunday. Le'Veon Bell hasn't looked anywhere near what Le'Veon Bell's supposed to look like at this stage of his career since he had his sit-out season. So is Darrell Williams going to carry the load for you that way, where you're going to run it 46 times? Or do you go back to being Kansas City, using those guys on the perimeter, and how will Buffalo attack on defense? Because I don't think they'll just sit back and let them do it that way. But I think we got a heck of a game on our hands. I really do. I still think Kansas City's a favorite in this one. I think they can make the adjustments and play. Mahomes should be fine. But I don't think it'll be anywhere. I don't think this game will look anything like what we saw in the regular season when Kansas City beat them in Buffalo.
Now, Charles, against the Ravens, the Bills committed to the blitz early and often, and they were able to contain Lamar Jackson. What's going to work against Patrick Mahomes? And, you know, he's a guy who's pretty quick in the pocket. He loves the short passes. Do they have to scrap that playbook on Mahomes?
Hazel, I think that they've got to scrap is probably too strong of a word, but I think they're going to have to be a lot more judicious about it. Patrick Mahomes eats up blitzes for breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, whatever you want, right? So when you blitz Patrick Mahomes, you're essentially telling your guys on the back end, you got a long day ahead of you. Because he eats it alive. Those receivers make big plays, et cetera. Doesn't mean you can't do it, but you better show him different looks that he hasn't. Yeah, I'm not going to say that he hadn't seen. That seems to be a bit too dramatic. But things that are going to make him make a decision faster and get the ball out of his hands. Because if he – look, he makes decisions post-snap, and he may keep the ball in his hands a little longer, which means it gives the receivers more time to get open. So if you don't get to him, you've got a problem. But I do think the book is much more we're going to play coverage against Patrick Mahomes. Because the reason you blitz Lamar Jackson is the same thing I said before. You're going to make him make quicker decisions, but he doesn't make decisions in the throwing game like Mahomes does. Right. He makes decisions much more, I'm going to flush and go. So you're blitzing him to get to him. With Mahomes, when you're blitzing to him, you better get him on the deck. Otherwise, your back end guys are screaming at the sidelines. I don't like that call. You can't leave me out here like this. This is going to be a problem. So I do think you're going to have to be a little bit more judicious on it. Do the corners come at different times that you don't expect? Do you send guys that didn't come in regular season that go at him? But whoever it is, get home, get him on the deck. Otherwise, you got problems.
With Charles Davis, is it important for the Bills to try to establish some kind of run game on Sunday?
No. No, because it's not them. It's not who they are. It's not part of what they do anymore. Can they? They have. I was fortunate enough, me and my crew, we called the first New England game in Buffalo. And he ran for 190 yards that game. I think Zach Moss led the charge. Devin Singletary was a big participant. That was the first game I think they got John Feliciano back off the injured list. And he started at guard and ended up playing center when Mitch Morse got hurt. But they found something, and Brian Daboll, the offense coordinator, stayed with it. Ran for 190 yards. I think they ran for 173 against the Chargers at one point. But lately, it's just not part of who they are. And it's not because Zach Moss got hurt in the playoff game. They weren't running it when Zach Moss was there. Brian Daboll told me earlier this year, it's not a secret. He said, look, we're a team that throws the ball and sprinkles in the run. So establishing the run, being, you know, all of a sudden I'm going to run it 30 times and eat up clock, which is a staple against Mahomes. You want him to not have the ball. I think for normal teams, as part of your game plan, I don't think that plays in as much for Buffalo. I think Buffalo feels like our ball control is throwing it and scoring. If we do that, that's who we are. If they run it and find a weakness, I think Brian Daboll will stay with it. But I don't think that's a priority in his mind. I don't see that at all.
Charles Davis is with us from the NFL on CBS. It's Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So Tom Brady, and there's so many narratives and stories you can write about Tom Brady, but here he is, the guy who's been the dominant quarterback, the dominant force in the AFC, going over to the NFC, having some hiccups in the regular season enough that his team has not hosted playoff games. But he goes to Washington with the better team and beats Washington. Okay, that's whatever. He then goes to New Orleans, and in typical Tom Brady fashion, we can discuss whether the defense carried the day or not, but still Tom Brady was on the field. Tampa Bay doesn't lose. A Tom Brady quarterbacked team doesn't lose to the same opponent for the third time in a season. They go into the Superdome, and they get it done. Now he's staring down the barrel of Lambeau Field and Aaron Rodgers and cold weather in his first career NFC championship game for the right to get back to the Super Bowl in the other conference. I mean, that's the storyline here. I know the Packers are slightly favored and arguably are the better team over the course of the season, but can Tom Brady, in his first year in the NFC, after 20 great years or close to 20 great years in the AFC, take a team on the road three times to get back home for the Super Bowl? That's the story.
Yeah, and isn't it a great story, too? And to me, as great as Tom Brady has been, the accomplishments, the 14th time he's going to be the quarterback of a team in a conference championship game, maybe this 14th time does more for his reputation, and I'm not going to say more than the previous 13, because that's folly. But this is one where everyone has to just look at it and go, okay, whatever I may have said or doubted or whatever, this guy is a flat-out force wherever he goes, because he inspires a defense to be better, even though the defense was pretty darn good. They were a heck of a lot better this year. The offense got better as the season went on. It's inarguable that the last month and a half, you looked at that Tampa Bay offense and said, oh, yeah, that's what we were worried about if you're an opponent. he can do all of these things. The idea that now this cold weather is going to get him when he played cold weather his entire career, again, I use the word folly. I think Tom Brady will play in whatever conditions and play to his best. He's going to be fine. Now, will all of his teammates? We'll find out. But I just think that they come in feeling like, we've got Tom Brady, you don't. That's just a different level of confidence. And Aaron Rodgers took a team to a Super Bowl all on the road, younger in his career, and won one. Don't tell me Tom Brady can't do it now, because he can. Green Bay is a better team. They have been through the course of the season. But they're not invincible at home like they used to be since Michael Vick went in there with the Falcons a few years ago and beat them in a playoff game in cold weather. They're not invincible that way. Their defense, if you run the ball and run it effectively, can struggle. And by the way, Tampa Bay can do that. Leonard Fournette now, Ronald Jones now, and a big, strong, physical offensive line. Another fun game to watch. But Brady getting the team to a conference championship, I just laugh because we're fortunate enough to sit here and watch this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care if you like him or don't like him or whatever. The respect needs to be there because he's helping carry another team there. This isn't a team carrying him. He's helping carry another team there.
And, you know, Brady has seen everything on that football field, every defensive scheme imaginable. So, you know, how do you contain him if you're the Packers?
Well, first and foremost, we get back to the basics on the whole thing. The Packers, where have they struggled, Hazel, in the last couple of years? It's been defensively against teams that do what? Commit to running the football, right? And decide to run it effectively. I mean, I still am covering my eyes and covering youngsters' eyes from last year's playoff game against San Francisco, where Jimmy Garoppolo didn't throw it 10 times in the entire game. Okay? So that's still an issue as far as I'm concerned with Green Bay. If Green Bay plays from the front, like the old Colts did with Peyton Manning, where, you know, you didn't worry about your defensive front as much because Peyton gave you a 14-0 lead, you just rushed the passer. If they can play like that, then big advantage Green Bay. But if we have a somewhat even game and Tom Brady can look up, see whatever, as you said, whatever you throw at him and realize you're going to play with six defensive backs, I've got Gronkowski on the field as a tremendous blocker. I've got an offensive line that I really like. I've got Fournette, who's playing the best football of his NFL career. Ronald Jones playing hurt but playing effectively. Let's see if you're going to slow me down this way before I decide to go back to the air.
And last
That's going to be the key to the game as far as I'm concerned.
And last one for me on Aaron Rodgers. He's only spent these last two seasons with Matt LaFleur, but he's having a career season. Why does the LaFleur-Rodgers, you know, combo work and work so quickly?
I think confidence levels, truthfully, Hazel, because I think that at the end of the run with Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers just didn't feel it with his head coach anymore. You know, and it's not like his talent got better as he got older. He's maintained it, right? He's like Brady. He's continued to be that guy. I'll put it to you this way. I remember watching games, and you guys tell me, when there's a timeout and the offense is on the field, does the quarterback usually come to the sidelines to confer with his head coach, with his play caller? Yes, right? That's kind of a normal deal, right?
Absolutely.
Over the last couple of years minimum in Green Bay, when I would do a game at Green Bay, me and my crew, we would remark privately and say, hey, let's see if Aaron goes to the sidelines today on the timeout. Almost never did.
Wow.
Okay? So there was a difference going on there that – you couldn't flat out say there was a difference because no one would confirm it for you. Like, no one's going to say, you know, some Aaron really doesn't like his coach or the coach is having a problem with it. No one's going to say that.
Yeah.
But you're just watching it, and you're like, that's weird. Watch now when he goes to the sidelines. He and LaFleur are conferring, et cetera. He has confidence there. He's playing with confidence, and he's playing with a little bit of a take that Green Bay front office. You chose a quarterback this year? Don't you know I can still play? And by the way, how'd that work out for us? Worked out really well. So can the front office take a bow and say, well, we motivated Aaron? No. Just Aaron's kind of like, let me tell you guys how it's going to go down. And his receivers got better around him. So give him credit that way.
Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS. I'm going to read you a quote from Robert Saleh yesterday. It's attributed to the New York Post, but it is from his introductory press conference. Quote, I believe coaches and players are in this thing together. Players want two things from a coach. First, they want to know you care about their well-being. As a coach, you make a personal investment in people. And two, can you help them make enough plays on Sundays for them to get paid as much as possible? End quote. That's Robert Sala. That's Robert Sala with the New York Jets. This is Dan Campbell with the Detroit Lions.
So this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing, all right? That's going to be the mentality.
Charles, Robert Sala is talking to my heart, my mind, and my wallet.
Your soul.
Dan Campbell is talking to somebody else's kneecap.
Yeah, look, can't play Freud, all right? Heck, I can't play Billy Crystal and analyze this. Okay, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not that person, right? But what Robert Sala was saying reminds me a lot of, and I'm saying goodbye to my beloved high school coach this weekend. Okay, the man that gave me an opportunity early, that looked out for me. What Robert Sala said in the beginning, coaches that care is who you respond to, right? When a coach gets on you and all that, if you know he cares or she cares, guess what? You'll do anything for them because you know they have your best interest at heart. That was my beloved high school coach who I'm saying goodbye to this weekend, and it is destroying me, all right? I didn't play. It was in high school, so money wasn't a factor. But he's right about that. If you're going to care about me and coach me to where I'm going to make more money, you're darn right I'm going to respond to that. He's speaking real language to those players. I think Dan Campbell was talking more to the fan base than he was to the players, because the players, that type of speech is going to be like, all right, great coach. Okay. Now what's the next step? But for the fans of Detroit who haven't had much since pick your time frame, right? That's much more what they want. Cause he keeps talking about, I want this team to be in the image of the city of Detroit, the people of Michigan, fighters, people are going to battle you the whole way. I think that plays well for them. So more power to him that way. I think Dan Campbell got hired for reasons other than that type of a speech. And he'll have a chance to prove that. But what Robert Sala said is much more in line with what the players are hearing and listening to. That speech that Dan Campbell made, they'll nod and go out and do their thing, but it's not the type of speech that lasts very long. It's just over time, do you coach to that level, coach to that effort, demand it, because – we see that in Buffalo. That's what Sean McDermott demands without saying he's going to bite kneecaps. But it's demanding effort. It's demanding attention to detail. It's demanding being accountable. All those things, that's what Dan Campbell's looking for.
Charles, we'll do it again next Friday. We're very sorry for your loss. And I hope it's a heartwarming weekend and you're able to reconnect with some people who also loved your old coach. Thanks for this, and we'll talk in a week.
Thanks, Charles.
Appreciate it. Great talking with you, too. You take care of yourselves and stay safe, okay?
You bet. Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS. Inside the Lines airs on Sunday morning, 10 o'clock, right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, George Russick, Dave Bastel, and this guy from Sports Interaction, Steve Rapp, with his picks for the weekend. Happy championship weekend, sir.
Hello, good morning. I am going to bite off George Russick's kneecaps on Sunday morning if I get the chance. I think Dan Campbell thinks he's still auditioning for a job in the old XFL. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing.
Or the WWE, sure, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure if that's going to work with today's player, but we'll see what happens.
I mean, it's an interesting turn of phrase. I've you know, hit people in the mouth. I remember that from Mike Singletary, biting kneecaps. I don't think I've ever heard anybody ever say that before, and I wouldn't be surprised if I never hear anybody ever say it again.
I thought we were supposed to be in a kinder, gentler time right now.
No. Well, yeah. No? They're taking out headshots, but you can still bite kneecaps. Yeah. There you go. let's kick this off. We got the pack at Lambeau, home field advantage without a sold-out crowd. I think some people are going to be allowed in the barn like last week. But Green Bay is a 3.5-point favorite at home over Tampa Bay in the NFC Championship game as we sit here this morning, Steve.
Yeah, and there's dozens of ways to bet these two games, and we're going to break them a bunch of them down, obviously, on Sunday. But as a preview, you're right, the Packers opened as a 4-point favorite, total of 50.5. The public money has been on the home Packers, but that number has dropped to 3.5 and actually trending down, Scotty. Looks like we may see a 3 by game time. Be weary of Tom Brady when the public goes against him. Since 2003, when Brady has received less than 50% of the bets, he's gone 25-18-3. Including 2-0 against the spread with the Bucks. So that's Tom Brady and the Bucks. There's a pretty good QB on the other side as well, and he covers football games at an amazing clip, especially when those games are at home. He's 62-35-4 against the spread at Lambeau Field for his career. Green Bay has won 14 games this season. 13 of them were by more than a touchdown. Rodgers had his worst game of the season against Tampa Bay, and we're going to credit Todd Bowles for a great game plan, but I don't see that happening twice. Tampa's defense has looked beatable against a bad Washington offense and a withering Drew Brees. I see him being gettable here. To that effect, my bet on this game will be the over. I played it when it opened at over 50.5. Two QBs who won't be thrown off by the frozen tundra. I like a rolling Packers offense and the GOAT trying to keep up. I'm looking forward to this one. I'm going to go Pack -3 and over and a whole bunch of other ways we'll talk about on Sunday.
Over in the AFC, Steve, my Chiefs are 3-point favorites over the Bills at Arrowhead. What do you think there?
Well, I'll tell you, Hazel, it's tough for you to be on a Toronto radio station and say your Chiefs.
I know.
You're not making many friends out there this morning, I'm sure. But Hazel, this number is really just a placeholder right now. It sits at Chiefs 2.5 -20 at Sports Interaction with a total of 54. There are threes out there, and the three can be bought cheap if that's what you like. This represents about, we're 70% sure Pat Mahomes will play. And this is a good place for the number to sit while we find out. When there is confirmation that he will play, which I believe there will be, we'll see this number hit 3.5. If Mahomes can't go, which I don't think he will, we'll see this number as high as Buffalo -4. So what do we think we know? Even if Pat Mahomes can play because he has passed concussion protocol, we think he might have a banged up toe, which was a concern before the head neck injury last week. We do know that even when he was healthy, the Chiefs were walking a razor edge every week and have gone 2-8 against the spread their last 10. The Bills, on the other hand, 12-6-2 against the spread this season. Josh Allen, 27-17-2 in his career. Put him on the road. He's an outstanding 13-5-2. And as a dog, 14-6-2. The Chiefs abandoned the running game in the early showdown against the Bills and gashed them on the ground. Gashed them on the ground. Bills proved last week that they can stop a team determined to beat them that way. And so this one might come down to a shootout as well. Betting markets see that. The total has risen by 2.5 points, down to 54 from 51.5. I'm going to go on form here. The Bills' just form looks better, but I'll wait. I'm going to assume that Mahomes will play, and I will get the 3.5 later. So check in Sunday morning and see where that number is.
Love it, Steve. Thanks for this, and we'll check in next week.
Enjoy the game, Steve.
Thanks. Well, and you enjoy it as well.
You Bye-bye. Bet. Inside the Line, Steve Rapp, George Russick, David Bastel, 10 o'clock Sunday morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A tribute to Tim and Sid, Elliot Friedman, Devon White, all ahead. Leafs and Oilers tonight. Dave Tippett thinks Wednesday night's game was plenty entertaining. And problems in Columbus again. We'll reset next. Leafs and Oilers tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Leafs trying for their get back after losing to the Oilers on Wednesday, and the theme is the same, pretty much exactly the same for the Raptors. They're trying for their get back after losing to the Heat on Wednesday. They host the Heat in Tampa again tonight, and there are question marks around arguably the best players on both teams. Auston Matthews left practice early yesterday, not feeling 100%. Pascal Siakam's got a bit of a wonky groin and copped to the fact it hasn't felt 100% for a while. And so he's a question mark for tonight.
Which is too bad, because after that sluggish start, you know, Siakam really started to heat up there. So let's hope for the best for him.
Miami is badly shorthanded. They didn't have Butler. They didn't have Hero on Wednesday. The Raps were lackluster defensively, and it's a climb now, Hazel. It's a climb back in. And thankfully, that middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference, as it so often is, has not separated itself from the bottom part of the pack. The Raps have plenty of time to get back into this thing. They think they found something with Chris Boucher.
Yeah.
Alex Len was waived earlier in the week. Nick Nurse is slowly piecing this thing together. And with not a lot of time, you know, just a handful of preseason games, you go into the regular season trying to figure out exactly what it is that you've got in a world where you're looking around going, there's no Ibaka anymore. There's no Gasol. We got a hole in the front court. And if on the off chance, some of those decisions, not giving guys extra years, like Ibaka got two with the clip and instead of one, which is what the Raptors were offering him. If some of those decisions were made to keep things freed up for this coming free agency class in the hopes of getting Giannis, well, that went by the wayside because he signed his long-term Supermax with Milwaukee.
And I know Aaron Baines has taken a lot of heat because he's not performing to, you know, expectations, but
Not performing to Ibaka Gasol.
Correct.
We got news for you. He ain't either.
Yeah, granted. And, you know, Eric Smith and I, we had a really really nice conversation about the Raptors the other day, and he told me that he hasn't really been practicing a whole lot because of COVID protocols. A lot of their practice sessions are either, you know, cut down or not at all because of COVID protocols. All the other guys around Aaron Baines have played together for the last few seasons. He is still in that process of, you know, learning the playbook and getting cohesiveness with his new teammates. And I think that is a plus for Chris Boucher, who's, you know, has been starting the second half of ball games when Aaron Baines has been lackluster in the first half. He's been starting at center, and he knows Kyle Lowry. He knows all these guys. And I think that has really been an added plus for Boucher. And it's great to see, you know, a Canadian big man do well. But I think we need to give Aaron Baines just, you know, a little more time. Everybody else knows each other. And I think, unfortunately, with COVID and the protocols, I think he still needs to, you know, find his groove with this new team.
Right. I don't think we're taking the opportunity to run Aaron Baines out of town just yet. That's the case, we need to get through this pandemic ASAP and get back to going outside and living our lives. Did you know, Hazel? And I
was getting nervous when you say that.
I stand corrected, clearly. If I didn't see a lot to like in terms of entertainment value in that Leafs Oilers game on Wednesday night, the problem ain't with the way the game was played. The problem is with people like you and me.
It's almost funny to me how everybody talked all summer about Toronto and Edmonton have to defend better, and then Toronto and Edmonton actually defend well, and now they think it's a bad hockey game. So that it just baffles me sometimes hearing what's going on.
Dave Tippett, Oilers coach, he was entertained.
Can't we defend better and score something? Can't we have an entertaining hockey game without being a snooze fest and still defend better?
Well, I mean, it's all about puck possession and it's all about transition. The best defensemen in the game are the guys who can get the puck in their own end and move the puck quickly up the ice to forwards who have momentum working out of their own end or going through the neutral zone. Right? And there are very clearly players on the Maple Leafs who you want, defensemen on the Maple Leafs who you want with the puck on their stick, Morgan Rielly, and God love them. This is not an insult. Different players bring different things. It looks sometimes like that puck is a grenade on Zach Bogosian's stick. I don't want Jake Muzzin rolling through the neutral zone carrying the puck up the ice. Different guys have different skill sets,
yeah.
But it is about the ability to make the first pass. The very best defenseman in the game, go back 15 years. Chris Pronger. What do you think most of when you think about the name Chris Pronger? You think about...
physicality.
Physicality. The chippiness. I was about to say the borderline dirtiness. Let's just be honest and say lines got crossed at times during Chris Pronger's career. Quite obviously, right? Brutal to play against. One of the best defensemen of his generation. But you go back and you watch him with the puck. He could lead transition up the ice. He could make that swift first pass. Zdeno Chara, big lug of a guy, strongest player in the league in his prime, even though he was a lean, mean 6'9", 7 feet on skates. Terrific with that first pass. That's the name of the game is puck possession and moving the puck up the ice. And, you know, the Leafs have got Morgan Riley. Travis Dermott, when he's on his game, is capable of those sorts of things. That's how you defend well when you have structure in your own end, and you also have the ability to move the puck up the ice quickly and efficiently once you have possession to your forwards who are breaking out with momentum. That's the name of the game. It's the name of the game. That, and growing a bean plant is your science lesson for the week. Like, that's the name of the game. Yes, I agree. I'm answering your question by saying, yes, you can defend well,
you can
create offense.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Like in any other sport, right? Good offense comes from good defense. Here it talked about in basketball a lot. In football, it's a little different, but you want your defense to get the offense back on the field ASAP. You want your pitchers in baseball to lock it down to get the bats back up.
I think we are going to see a totally different game than we saw on Wednesday. I think, after listening to Austin Matthews, and hopefully everything's okay and he's on the ice, I feel like maybe, you know, they, as in the Leafs, maybe they got away from their game plan, which is, you know, a high-flying offensive game plan. And maybe instead of spending so much time focusing on the Oilers' two, you know, star players, you know, he's right. Maybe they got away from the game plan a little bit, and maybe we'll see something different tonight.
Over under at the Sports Interaction website, 6.5.
Really?
I'm taking the over in tonight's game.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
Somebody's going to win 4-3 or better. I'm going to take the over.
And I want to see 5-4.
I want to see Austin play because, I mean, those were some comments after the game.
Yeah.
There was meaning behind those words on Wednesday night. And we'll be fascinated to see what the game plan is. I mean, you obviously have to key in and do your best to lock down Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. But even there's a limit to that. Like, McDavid's just one of those guys who creates on his own.
He's going to be McDavid. He's just going to do what he's going to do. You just got to be better than that as a team.
Yeah, and you got to persist and stick with it. And I'll keep coming back to McDavid's charge down the left wing where he went forehand to backhand, cut in front of the net, and Muzzin almost got walked but stayed with him just long enough, stuck with him to, he didn't poke the puck away, but impede McDavid's ability to get off that backhand shot that was supposed to go shelf on Freddie Anderson. We'll see how tonight's game plays out, Leafs and Oilers. And then the Leafs head west. They got a 4 p.m. game in Calgary on Sunday. Elliot Friedman at the top of the hour, and we'll get the latest on Matthews. We'll get the latest on the Washington Capitals' COVID situation. Pierre-Luc Dubois, John Tortorella are back at it in Columbus. Dubois was benched for the final 43 or 44 minutes of last night's game. Tortorella was asked about it after the game, said, "You're talking to the wrong guy. Don't talk to me, talk to him." Dubois was requested by the media and politely declined. He wants out and is the latest player in Columbus to want out. We'll drill down on the details with Elliot Friedman. Devon White, former Blue Jays outfielder, the great center fielder, on the acquisition of George Springer and what that means for the franchise and the virtual winter week that is coming up February 1st to the 6th. And Hazel will be a part of that. We'll discuss that a little bit. It's the replacement for Winterfest during the COVID-19 pandemic. It will still be a lot of fun. Something to chew on for great Canadian meat on the other side. We pay tribute to Tim and Sid. These guys have been at it for 20 years. I'll tell you my first memories as a college student up in Ottawa watching Tim and Sid. These guys have been a part of our lives together for a very long time. They mean a lot to us as sports fans in this city and this country. We'll offer our thoughts coming up. So I don't know if we got enough time to fully say what needs to be said about Tim and Sid. And of course, the news came down yesterday that Sid is staying in the Rogers family, but is leaving Tim and Sid effective February 26th to take over as the co-host of Breakfast Television on City TV effective March 10th. And so ends, Hazel, a partnership between Tim and Sid that has carried them through various incarnations, from the early days of their career at The Score, where they first became sports TV stars in our country, and got their radio start as well on hardcore sports radio, to Sportsnet 590 The Fan, where they took over as the incredibly successful lead-in show to Primetime Sports with Bob McCown. God, that's got to be seven or eight years ago now.
It feels like a lifetime ago, to be honest.
And that morphed, of course, into the Tim and Sid show at 5 o'clock Eastern time each and every day that we enjoy on Sportsnet up until now and for a few more weeks. I was a college kid, and look, I always laugh at these things because it suddenly makes you so old. Back when I was a kid in college, cable TV was just that, cable TV. It was run off of cables. We didn't quite have the 1,000 or 1,500 channel universe yet, but The Score was a thing. The Score was a thing around the turn of the century. And that's when Tim and Sid were breaking in as the highlight sort of sports anchor, sports highlight show duo on The Score at nights. They'd give you all the highlights. They'd throw a little personality in. They weren't sitting at a desk. They were standing up. So that was a different look. The Score had brought the ticker in, which was cutting edge at the time. Sportsnet and TSN picked that up off of The Score. It was the place to be. And I remember that I would watch Tim and Sid before I'd go to bed, and I would make sure that my TV was turned off with The Score as the channel it was held to, so that when I woke up and turned the TV on, I was on The Score to watch the highlights. Tim and Sid were two faces I saw and two voices I heard before sleep time almost every night for a long time as a young, aspiring broadcaster still in college up in Ottawa. These guys have influenced me and have been terrific and at the top of their game of what they do for 20 years. It's been a wonderfully successful partnership.
You know, I don't think people realize, number one, it's tough to get in this business. A, if there's a job out there these days, it is tough to get in this business. To be in this business for two decades, A, you're doing something right. The longevity of their careers, to me, has been the most impressive feat. Given the way the television and radio landscape evolves year after year, there's always the new best thing. There's always the new shiny toy. These guys have been consistent. They have been at the top of their professions in their respective shows. 20 years is what aspiring broadcasters would kill for. That's a dream, to be sustainable and to be successful and to be, as you said, in different, you know, different aspects of this industry, to be that versatile is also to a credit. I mean, you know, best of luck to Sid. BT Toronto, man, they're lucky to have him. Tim, we're lucky that he's, you know, still going to hang out with those of us, the unwashed. So I'm thrilled for each of them. I'm thrilled for Sid. I'm thrilled for Tim that he can continue. But gosh darn it, when you're in this business for that long, you did and are doing something right.
Congratulations to Tim and Sid. We'll be listening all the way up through to February the 26th, and we'll look forward to that final show. I'm sure they will go out of their way, and deservedly so, to make it special. Something to chew on. Something to chew on for great Canadian meat. Elliot Friedman on the Leafs and Oilers. Was there anything to what Austin Matthews had to say after Wednesday night's game? There certainly seems to be something to what John Tortorella is saying about Pierre-Luc Dubois in Columbus and what Dubois is not offering as a retort, pun intended. The Washington Capitals are stricken with COVID and are facing a significant fine. We'll get into all of that. Devon White later in the hour. Elliot Friedman for those subjects and more next. Kirby Yates, new Blue Jays reliever on writer's block at 4:30. Mark Giordano of the Calgary Flames will be on Tim and Sid at 6:30 this evening. We've got the Leafs and Oilers tonight at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And in about 20 minutes' time, Hazel, I know you're jotting these down, even though you're not qualified to win due to the fact you're an employee, we will give out the next keyword for you to text into 590-590. For the chance to win a virtual meet and greet with the Maple Leafs' Joe Thornton. Plenty to get to with our next guest, Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada, 31 Thoughts, the podcast and blog. Good morning, Mr. Friedman. How are you?
Good morning, Elliot.
Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Well, but we can't waste time with the niceties because there's just so much to talk about. Silent Vic, what did Austin Matthews say on Wednesday night after the Leafs lost to the Oilers?
When you go through the pre-scout, obviously, like, we key in on those two guys. They're extremely dangerous, two of the top players in the world. But, you know, we can't get away from our game, too. I mean, you know, we got to go out there and play our game and try to produce offense. We got to play to win, not play to contain two guys.
Frustration after a dull, boring loss? Or was there meaning behind those words that the game plan on Wednesday night is what cost them, and there's a bit of a broader frustration there?
I have to tell you that I had two very different feelings on this one, Scotty. When I read the quotes on Twitter, I was like, holy smokes, like, that's a grenade. And then when I watched the video, I didn't think it was as bad. Sometimes I think you need to see the tone and the facial expression to really get the full context of it. It was interesting. It was a bit of an eyebrow raiser, that's for sure. And also, so was what a reason he wasn't at practice yesterday, and hopefully we'll get some clarity on all of that. But I didn't think it was as bad as I read initially. Sometimes, you know, the way it looks written and the way you see it is very different. I saw it as A, honest, which I don't have a huge problem with, and B, I did see it as a player saying, you know, I'd like it if the chains came off me a little bit. You know, the fascinating thing about this is we all sat there on Wednesday night hoping for a shootout involving two of the most talented players and two of the most talented teams in terms of what they can do offensively, and we got an offensive dud. And I thought it was really interesting that yesterday Dave Tippett kind of sniffed at all of that and said, hey, you guys say that we can't defend, and when we defend, you complain about it. You can't have it both ways. I thought that was a really interesting answer. I'm curious to see how this one goes tonight. I personally, in a sport that could use a bit more edge in the way it markets itself, I didn't mind it. If I was the coach, I would have minded it a little, but I didn't think it was as bad as I initially thought.
Well, here's the Dave Tippett clip.
It's almost funny to me how everybody talked all summer about Toronto and Edmonton have to defend better, and then Toronto and Edmonton actually defend well, and now they think it's a bad hockey game. So that it just baffles me sometimes hearing what's going on.
Like, Elliot, I think Dave Tippett's a really interesting story. This guy has been a terrific head coach in the National mm-hmm. Hockey League for a long time. We just haven't paid a lot of attention to it because it happened in Dallas and then in Arizona. And I know they made the Western Conference final one year and lost to the Kings, but like you kind of get lost out there in the desert. Now he's in Edmonton. He's trying to piece together his goaltending at this point. He is without for the entire season, arguably his best defenseman in Oscar Klefbom. And he knows that if games are close, he's got two players in McDavid and Draisaitl who can turn the screws and create a big moment at any time. I think we saw mm-hmm. that on Wednesday night. Connor McDavid created two grade A scoring chances strictly with his speed and skill all by himself. He didn't finish either, but those are examples of things that McDavid can do, and we know if he does it often enough, he will finish. I think Tippett is doing his best to work with what he's got, knowing that ultimately he'll be comfortable and live with the fact that if it's a tie game or you're down a goal with 5 minutes left, you throw your best players out on the ice and trust that their magic will come through often enough.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that. When Tippett begins that quote saying, "I think it's funny," I actually don't think he thinks it's funny. that was my first reaction to that. Look, they started out very poorly, and there's no question you said to them, "Look, we did it your way. Look what happened, and now we're going to do it my way." It's interesting. Like I kind of take a look at this whole thing as, we're doing two things here. You're trying to win, and you're trying to sell the game. And, from a pure entertainment point of view, that game was a dud the other night. But if I was Dave Tippett, I wouldn't care. I'm not here to, I'm not necessarily here to be entertaining. I'm here to win. But, I do think there were a lot of us who turned, it's an old, it's an old argument. Hazel, you're obviously huge into baseball. Baseball's kind of going through that right now too. You want to win, and the way you win right now in baseball isn't necessarily the most entertaining thing. Right. And there's this big debate, what's best for the sport. I had people texting me on Wednesday night and said, "This is not good. That was a nationally televised game in both Canada and the United States. And it wasn't good entertainment." But there'll be plenty of other people that say, "What's the use of having good entertainment if you're missing the playoffs and you stink?" It's an old, I get it. It's an old battle. I just wish we could have both.
I know it's a small sample size, Elliot. Are you noticing any trends when teams do face each other on a back-to-back?
That's a good question. I think the second game tends to be a little nastier.
Yeah.
I think that is one thing I have noticed in a couple of these games. I'm watching last night, Vancouver-Montreal, and that one boiled over at the end of the game, although that one was as much frustration as anything else. I have noticed in some of these situations that the second game tends to be a little, or if the first one is kind of out of control a little bit, like in terms of the score or what's going to happen, it boils over a bit. I have noticed the tempers a little edgier, either late in those first games or in the second, than I don't know if I would say I was expecting, but it's definitely there. I do like that about it. I got to tell you, Hazel, I hope the NHL does this long term. I think it's better.
You're talking back-to-back games. Not the divisional realignment with heavy focus on division? Yeah, okay, just the back-to-back.
I'm actually in favor of both. Like, I think the Canadian division should be permanent. Not that they don't play U.S. teams. They should play everybody. But I think the Canadian division should be permanent. And one of the reasons I believe that is financial. I think that if you're trying to grow the revenue in your sport, as every sport is after this is over, I think putting four Canadian teams in the playoffs grows your revenue. Now, I didn't think I would ever feel this way, because I think it should be earned, not given. But, from a pure revenue growing standpoint, if you want to do that, putting four Canadian teams in the playoffs will do it. I do think they should consider the Canadian division long term, but still have them play every team in the States. I'm also convinced, Scotty, that if you have the teams in the States play each other a little bit more, especially their rivals, as the league used to, I think the fans in the States would probably want that too.
Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So on to more drama. Here's John Tortorella.
I've coached Luke like this for a couple of years, as far as trying to get him to get some growth in his game and growth as a pro. So nothing changes here. There's more spotlight on it. I get that. And I get you guys have to ask me the questions. But I think you're asking the wrong guy.
Okay, and that's fine, except Pierre-Luc Dubois declined an opportunity to do a Zoom call of his own after a one-goal loss against the Tampa Bay Lightning last night, in which Dubois played 3 minutes and 55 seconds and did not see the ice from about the 16:30 mark, about 4.5 minutes left in the first period onward. This is not the first scenario this year. This is a franchise, Elliot. Columbus is a cool town. It's a university town, Ohio State, but it is not destination A for free agents. Panarin went out the door. Bobrovsky went out the door. Josh Anderson wanted out, got traded to Montreal, and doubled his goal total this year on opening night from the one he had in 27 games in an injury-plagued year last year. And now Dubois and Torts are at each other's throats. I understand where Torts is coming from and the mentality, but I don't understand how he thinks he can win these battles continually long-term, coaching a team that typically is not destination A for players to begin with, and certainly wouldn't be if the coach has a rep around the league as being difficult to work with.
Look, did you see that shift last night?
I caught the highlight. So okay. I didn't see the full shift.
Okay. Like, as I was getting ready to come on this morning, I saw a tweet from Marian Gaborik about it. And he said, basically, and the Beatles broke up, been there, done that.
Yeah.
And I understand why a lot of people would look at it that way. If you're being, everybody. If you're being honest about this, you cannot blame this one on Tortorella, not for last night. Now, the whole situation, I mean, if you want to think that Tortorella was just waiting for an excuse, I guess you could, but you can't look at that last shift last night and blame Tortorella for that. Like, Scotty, when the show's over during a commercial break, like, I'm not telling you what to do, but you got to watch that shift.
Yes.
It's bad.
But Elliot, my point is now we're into a you know what swinging contest. Like Dubois.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that, Scotty. I do. But and I think you could certainly make the argument that maybe this was inevitable. And it probably was. But like I got to tell you, like watching that last night, there is no way. Like. I sent that clip last night before we recorded the podcast, because we did an update to the podcast after the game, and obviously I knew I was coming on this morning. I sent that clip last night to a bunch of people, including some people I know who cannot stand Tortorella. And they all came back to me unanimously and said, even the people who don't like him said, you can't blame Tortorella for that one.
Yes, but I guess my point is it's just the next step in the devolution of what's going on here. It's push-pull, push-pull. These guys are now, to the detriment of the team, agitating each other.
Yes, that's true. And, I think there'll be a lot of us waiting to see what comes out of this today. I saw quotes from Nick Foligno last night, who's the captain of the Blue Jackets. You could tell he was unhappy with Dubois. He said, as you pointed out, this isn't our first rodeo with this. And secondly, as he also said, like, as long as he's here, basically, you know, we're going to deal with it. And, we're going to go with the guys who basically want to play. That was really ugly last night. I'm sure that the Blue Jackets will renew their efforts to trade him. I'm sure, nobody's not aware in the league of what happened last night. I'm sure teams will reach out to the Blue Jackets and say, what do you guys want to do? Renew their efforts. I don't think people will like it. I don't think it destroys his trade value. I think everybody will look at it and say, when he gets to us, he'll be better because he wants out. I think it's going to be interesting to see if that makes Columbus say, all right, we have to do it. Or are they still feeling dangerous that if they feel they have to do it, they're going to make a bad deal? Because you know some of the teams will try to squeeze them knowing they're desperate. I'll tell you the most interesting thing I heard last night is they have a player who's absent right now for COVID-related reasons, and that's Mikko Koivu. He's been on the COVID list for 8 days. Someone said to me last night, if there's any chance that Koivu can play on Saturday, they wondered if Dubois would be a healthy scratch, if that's the next place that we're going here. So I'll tell you, Scott, it's interesting. I mean, I think that there's no question in my mind that after that game, Columbus has no choice but to renew their efforts to trade him. I just think it's a dangerous time to make a deal when you're emotional like that.
So, Elliot, you said you don't think it's going to destroy Dubois' trade value. What, you know, how does this affect the, you know, long-term view of the Columbus Blue Jackets organization? Because Nick Foligno said afterwards, like, hey, this isn't the first guy that we've had to deal with wanting to leave this organization. I mean, when you've got these young players, you know, top-notch stars leaving, I mean, long-term, that's got to do something to your organization.
Well, I do think that that's one of the things that the Blue Jackets are kind of going through. There's been a few issues. Number one, they are a grind to negotiate with, and everybody can be tough to deal with. Columbus really has that reputation, especially when they have the power, the leverage, and the hammer of the CBA. They really wield it, and in the past, that has been something that has driven people crazy. Although one of the people who was a very tough negotiator is now in Florida. Bill Zito is the GM and is not there anymore. That's one thing that definitely has happened. I think when they've also been a team that has in the past not, gone for the agreed to the huge numbers in terms of salary. That's why Bobrovsky left. Although I don't think that was the case here, Hazel. I believe that they were prepared to make Dubois the highest paid player in the history of the franchise, somewhere in the 8x8 range, if, he was willing to take that deal. At the time, he was not. So I don't think that was the issue here. But I have no question that top to bottom, they're looking at this and saying, how do we have to change here? And because you're right, it has to stop. Now, the one thing that, Tortorella gave an interview about a week ago where he said that he wished Dubois was more honest with his teammates about why he wants out. I've asked around and what did he say? And basically what he told his teammates was he's just not happy, but he didn't really go into it anymore. I think Tortorella is a part of it. I've been discouraged from saying he's all of it. So it sounds like there's something here that we don't have the full answer to. I really believe that. I think it's more, there's just something to unpack here that we don't know about yet. But I do have to think, if you're the Blue Jackets, you're looking top to bottom and you're saying, you know, at some point in time, we have to stop this. And I know they've really been stung and disappointed by the fact that this player, who they took a chance on, number three overall in this draft year, like, he was not considered one of the top three players by a lot of people, and they were right about it. They've obviously been stung about the fact that this is where the relationship is.
With Elliot Friedman, in just a couple more minutes, Elliot, so it's hard to get into a big, broad discussion about this. Carolina's facilities are closed until further notice. Their game's postponed through to tomorrow, so it's quite likely more could be postponed since they're not able to get together, not able to practice, etc. The Capitals are on the butt end of a $100,000 fine for interacting, Alex Ovechkin, Orlov, a few teammates, getting together in a hotel room and interacting with no face masks. I guess my question at its simplest level is there more to this than we know? Because I have a hard time as a layperson, I am certainly not an epidemiologist, but I have a hard time as a layperson understanding how guys who are in locker rooms together without masks, guys who are turning to each other and talking to each other on the bench, guys who are playing against an opponent on any given night, are at a greater risk to transmit chilling out in a hotel room when they're already essentially bubbled.
Well, first of all, a mild correction. I don't like correcting people on air, particularly teammates, Scott, even though I love telling you you're wrong about things. It's not that they weren't wearing masks when they got together in the room. It's just that the travel protocols say that you can't have more than one person in a room, in a hotel room.
But my question is, like,
Hold on. I get it. I just wanted to say, correct the fact. It wasn't because they weren't wearing masks in a room. It's just that they were all together in a room. You know, like, you're right. I mean, look, that's the same point that Alexander Ovechkin's wife, Nastya, made. She said, look, like, they're together on the ice, on the bench. What's the big deal if they're in the room? And, you know, obviously I asked around on this. And the reason, look, well, this is what happened. One of the players, and it's been reported at Samsonov, came down with a positive test. And they go through the contact tracing, and they said, okay, who are you with in a non-hockey environment? And they do the contact tracing, and they find out he's with the three teammates in his room. Here's the dilemma if you're the National Hockey League. You've got a team in San Jose that isn't at home. And those players are not happy about it. And they shouldn't be. That would suck for any one of us if we were going in this situation. Scotty, you've got a situation here in Canada where these teams are being allowed to do in playing and traveling across provincial lines that other people are not allowed to do. If it gets out that you knew about this violation of your protocol and you don't do anything about it, what do you think that some of these governments would say? Oh, wait a sec. We're giving you these special privileges, or you want to come back to Santa Clara County where the Sharks play and you won't follow your own protocols? You won't keep your own rules? It's stiff. And there's been plenty of people who've made the same argument you have. But the bottom line is you got to show that you're enforcing your rules. And I know the Capitals aren't happy. And the thing that one of the reasons the Capitals are disappointed is you set up rooms in your hotel on the road that are sort of like lounges where the players can go as a group because they're socially distanced and they wouldn't have had a penalty. So they were kind of like, okay, you know, I wish you guys would have gone to the room. So I get the frustration. I think the Capitals are also frustrated because, as you mentioned, the Hurricanes have had to postpone games. And the Capitals, as it stands, aren't right now, which tells us it doesn't come down to your contract tracing. It comes down to how many cases you actually have. So I get everyone's frustration here, but I think the league is worried. Like, what happens if a government says, wait a sec, you knew about this and you didn't do anything about it? Why should we let you have these exceptions? And that's why I think they sent the message.
Awesome stuff. Thanks for this, pal. We're up against it. We'll get you back on next week. We always look forward to it.
Thanks, Elliot.
All right.
All right, Scott, you have a great weekend. Hazel, have a great weekend. Speak to you guys later.
Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada and 31 Thoughts, the podcast and the blog. We are giving you the chance to virtually meet Joe Thornton. Tune in every weekday for keywords. And when you hear them, you text them to 590-590 to enter. The more keywords you collect, the better your odds are to win a spot in the video chat with Joe. So your next keyword comes now. That keyword, spell it the Canadian way, is center. The keyword is center. Text center to 590-590 right now to enter. Hear your next keyword at 1220 during Hockey Central. For details on how to meet Jumbo Joe, visit sportsnet.ca/590. The great Devon White, Buffalo Bisons coach, Blue Jays former center fielder, on the signing of George Springer and more next. Well, COVID makes things a little different this year, and don't we know that over the last 10 or 11 months, Hazel? And the Blue Jays Winterfest, which is always an awesome experience, down at Rogers Centre, meet and greets with current and former players, stuff for the kids, all of that, it ain't happening this year.
No.
But there's going to be a virtual Winterfest, and you're going to be a part of it.
I am. I think Ben Wagner and I are going to be hosting Trivia Night during Winterfest, but it will be as good virtually as it would have been at Rogers Center.
You get to meet all your favorite people in and around the Blue Jays February 1st to 6th. To talk about that and so much more, one of the great former Toronto Blue Jays, a man still very involved in the organization, Devon White is with us. Devo, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Devo.
Good morning, everyone. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. In 6 years, $150 million, George Springer, a Toronto Blue Jay. And we thought, well, who better to ask about George Springer than a former center fielder himself? Devo, your reaction to really what is an epic and exciting signing for the Blue Jays heading into 2021?
I think it's great, you know, and, one of the questions to me was, you know, do the star players want to come to Toronto? And, you know, the situation, you know, in Buffalo and whether we're going to play in Toronto or not, I don't think that affects players. You know, speaking from my background as a player, that wouldn't affect me. It's basically players want security, and that's what he got. So I think, you know, they got a good job. And, you know, speaking on that behalf with the core young man that we have, I think, you know, it was great.
And you know, players who don't play for the team usually poo-poo the fact that they're playing on turf. Now, granted, it is an AstroTurf at Rogers Center, but George Springer, Devo, as you know, has played on grass there at Minute Maid Park his entire career. How big of a transition will this be for him? And are there ways, as a center fielder, you can maybe cut down on the wear and tear playing on turf?
Well, as you know, my career a little bit, I didn't dive as much. So that's one big thing. He can't do as much, you know, because it does wear on your body. And, you know, in his case, he's a bigger guy. And he's at that age, he has to play probably a little bit deeper. And, you know, during the spring, I'll be around to kind of help him out in that situation and playing in Rogers Center.
With Devon White, you don't have to dive when you get to everything, right? I mean, is that... That's the truth.
You always had the cleanest uniform, right, Devo?
Well, that shows that I wasn't working too hard, huh?
There you go. There you go. Or you just had the grace, the speed and the grace to get there quickly.
Yeah.
You
know, actually, you know, I just had a knack of knowing if I can catch the ball or not. And I see a lot of outfielders dive for balls and really knew they couldn't catch the ball, and it just turns into an extra base or two. So my theory behind that is just keep going. If I know I can't catch it, I'm going to keep that ball in front of me.
Would you describe that as almost a sixth sense? Like you talk about having a knack, like you just know. Can you explain what you mean by that?
It's basically when you're going after a ball, each outfielder or each position player, you know if you can get to it or not. And if you have to stretch out and dive and catch a ball, then that's your last alternative. But if you know you cannot catch that ball, the sense of diving for the ball is going to give that player an extra base or two, because playing center field is a demanding position, and the corners are not going to back you up as quick. So it's if you say a sixth sense, I think it's kind of a sixth sense and also common sense.
With Devon White. That makes sense. With Devon White, so then cop to this. How many balls did you catch that initially, that split-second read off the bat, you thought you wouldn't?
Oh, that's a difficult, that's a difficult question there.
But it happens.
When a ball is hit off the bat, there's balls that are hit over your head, and it's different factors. It could be wind, to slow the ball down, or it could be to speed it up. But some of the balls that you think you're not going to get to and it slow down, you're still going hard after the ball. But if you can meet the ball where it's going to come down at the same time, that's a knack. You go hard after the ball. In the other case, when the wind is blowing out and you're going hard after the ball, and you're like, wow, this ball is out of here and you can't catch it because the wind took it from you. So it goes both ways.
You mentioned looking forward to seeing George Springer at camp, and those of us who come down to Dunedin have a pleasure of seeing you working with the outfielders. I'm curious, with Teoscar Hernandez and Gurriel Jr., where did you see the biggest improvements in their work in the outfield?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I think both of those players are a little underrated playing defense. And there's a factor when you're playing in different – let's talk about Gurriel. He came up at shortstop, and then he went to left field. He came down and played some left field, and we worked a little bit in Buffalo. And he came back up, and he got used to playing left field, so it becomes a little bit easier for him to play left field, and he's been doing a good job. I think with him, his first step is good. It's just reading the ball in that particular ballpark and a lot of ballparks in the major leagues. That left field light is pretty damaging going to, left center. And he has played in that position where the light is. So anything to his right, he gets great jumps. So he's playing into the light, if you understand what I mean. Hmm. He stayed where the ball would go into the light. He's playing in that position. So when the ball is hit, he's in a good position to catch the ball, and he's done a great job. And I think he's, like I said, he's been underrated. We know about his throwing arm and his quick release, but he does get good jumps on the ball. I would like to see him play a little bit closer, shallower, but, with the organization, they want to play a little bit deeper at this time. And as far as Teoscar goes, I think if we leave him in a position, he will get better. I think he was so hesitant about making mistakes in the outfield, it took away from his defense, because, like I said, when he came down to see me, I'm like, what's going on with you? Because he caught every ball that was there. And I'm like, what's going on with you? And the way he explained it to me, it was just more of a nervous and not wasn't being afraid of making a mistake. And, this year, I think, last year, he did a lot better playing defense, because I tell him, hey, if you're going to make an error, make an error, but don't be hesitant about it. You just got to go all out, and he has done a good job doing that.
Former Blue Jay Devon White is with us. Virtual Winter Week is presented by TD, and it runs from February 1st to the 6th. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So, Devon, you're deeply familiar with the organization. You're working with the kids coming up. First base outfield coach with AAA Buffalo. You're down there at spring training. I mean, you're a coach now. You're fully invested at the minor league level in particular. What is some of the information that you have access to now that you wish you did when you played?
Analytics, I think old school players, I should say, analytically, we knew where to play because we studied those players. We watched them. I think it's taken a little away from the present players because, as you can see, they're looking in their hats or in their pockets to see where to play a guy. And I think after the first series, they should know for the rest of the year who's pitching and where these guys should be positioning. So I really preached that to them and said, hey, it's really a little disgrace if you keep looking in your hat, but if you don't know these players by the second or third at bat, where to position yourself. And, you know, that's taken away from your defense to always doing that. So to answer your question, I think analytically, basically the information that's given to them, it's sometimes good and sometimes it's too much. And I wouldn't want that to affect my defense. Offensively, it's great. You know, you know what's going to, and it's the same theory. You study pitchers, you understand what they're trying to do to you and go forward with that. But the good ones that are there now in the big leagues, they don't take too many information because they already have it. They know what pitchers are trying to do to them. They know how to play defense because they see what this guy is, what's his habit, where he always hit the ball. So they play on hunches like that. Now, I'm not taking any away from analytics. There's times that balls are hit in the middle of the middle and players are playing right there, and this player wasn't supposed to hit it up the middle. So it works in both hand in hand.
Devon White, our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And correct me if I'm wrong here. I seem to recall, Devon, that your most famous catch is the catch in the 92 World Series that was the start of what should have been a triple play, but that you have said in the past that it was not, in your opinion, the greatest catch you've ever made. What is the greatest catch you feel you ever made?
Well, let's go through that again. It was a famous catch because it was in the World Series.
Right.
But the
and an important catch.
I've made, yeah. Right. And the best catch I've ever made, I think, was in Baltimore when half my body went over the fence and I had to backhand a ball and curl it from it falling out of my glove. And I think that's one of, you know, I would put that on the top of my list. Of making plays.
Devon, Blue Jays fans are going to be really excited to take part in the virtual Winterfest this year, of course, with the pandemic, everything. We want to be as safe as we can. Everything is virtual. But in the past, you get to, you know, catch up with some of your former teammates. Now, this year, fans are going to see J.P. Arencibia, Pat Borders, Sean Green, Shannon Stewart, Dave Steben, and, of course, yourself virtually. But in the past, who were some of your former teammates that you looked forward to reconnecting with during Winterfest?
Well, it's always good to connect with your former teammates because we talk every now and then on the phone. It's like we don't miss a beat. But at the same time, seeing them in person and giving them a hug, I think, you know, it means a lot. And, you know, although I didn't play very long with Dave Steve, but, you know, just seeing him around, it's good to see, especially what's going on in today's life with the COVID-19 and the older players that are passing. One of my ex-teammates, Don Sutton, passed away yesterday. And, you know, it's good to see those guys, you know, around. And just saying that, you know, you mentioned earlier with young men, and I'm changing the subject a little. You say the young kids, we talk about young men as far as the Blue Jay core is concerned. You know, when you hear Bo, you hear Vladdy, but you don't hear too much about Teoscar. You don't hear too much about Gurriel and the up-and-coming kid now that I really enjoy watching being a big leader and a professional is Kirk.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, he's going to be a cult hero. Yeah.
Oh, man, I saw him in, we weren't in Buffalo, so we were in Rochester, and he was there with me for a while, and the way he goes about his business, and all of these, you know, even Kevin, you know, Biggio, the way they go about their business, that core that the Blue Jay has right now, and now bringing Springer on, and of course, you know, the talk was, are the Blue Jays going to sign big name players, but you can't just sign the big name players and bring them to a core like this that it doesn't intertwine or mingle, or you should say the chemistry is not there. So I'm happy that the Blue Jays took their time and did what was right as far as, you know, who they are bringing in the organization, because it makes a big difference with these young men that are in the organization. That's the core of team right now, and you notice I didn't mention any pitchers because I'm a position player.
They're like goalies in hockey. They're a league unto their own. Leave them off to themselves, right? Leave them off to themselves. Well, Devo, awesome of you to do this, and Virtual Winter Week is brought to you by TD. Again, it runs from February 1st to the 6th. Current players like Kevin Biggio, Danny Jansen, Nate Pearson will be involved. Former Blue Jays, Devo, like yourself, J.P. Arencibia, Pat Border, Sean Green, Shannon Stewart, the aforementioned Dave Steeb. BlueJays.com/virtualwinterweek. BlueJays.com/virtualwinterweek. You'll find the schedule for the entire week on that site. Tickets are on sale now. Be sure to get them. Devon White, thanks for doing this, Devo. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, Devo.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me.
And we'll get you set for a good show next.
Time. I know you do. What you say?
Dropkick Murphys, that is just the best.
It was the coolest, and I didn't know I was in their song. And Ken Casey sent me an email when I was in, was I in New York? I may have been in New York. And he said, hey, just so you know, we haven't forgotten about you. And there's a song. And I thought maybe just a small snippet. But the bridge to a song, come on.
I know.
Come on.
It's all about you. That's incredible. Shipping up to Boston, of course, that was
huge.
They play that at Fenway all the time. That might be, aside from the baseball, the thing that stands out most to me about the 2013 World Series, which I had the opportunity to cover. The place gets rocking when the Dropkick Murphys.
Awesome. Yeah.
Scotty,
awesome.
You think they'll ever write a song about us?
Who's they?
And by they, anybody.
Who is they? Hugh, get on the horn with Sturgill Simpson's agent.
Sturgill Simpson, yeah. First of all.
Okay, Sturgill Simpson. And get on the horn with his agent and see what he can do for us. It's been a blast, Hazel. Fun
Thank
week.
You. You guys Great are a ton job. Of fun. You know, they're lucky to have Hugh. They're lucky to have you guys. Really, really fantastic. Silent Vic, you too. And our producer, Mike Gentile.
And Hayden over there on the other
side
of the glass.
Oh, my
as well.
Goodness.
You can't see him because he's tucked behind the
TV. That's right. Sorry, Hayden.
Been a blast this week. Blair is with me Monday and Tuesday of next week. Ziggy's back on Wednesday. Have a wonderful weekend. Good show's next.
Please don't go. We love you so. Don't go away, my Hazel, man.